This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhaib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Yes, we are sending a message to the international community to give us recognition. Somaliland is a full-functioning government. It has a political parties. It has a currency. It's different from Somalia. It has stability. It's a democratic country.
That was Mahmoud Mohamed Hassan, a teacher in the breakaway Republic of Somaliland, which holds elections tomorrow. Details coming up also. Mauritius opposition coalition wins election by a landslide. And Chad says hundreds of Boko Haram fighters are crossing over into Cameroon, Niger, and Nigeria. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Representatives from more than 200 governments are gathered in Azerbaijan for annual talks on the climate crisis. Scientists say rich industrialized countries are chiefly responsible for global warming because of burning fossil fuels to drive their economies. African countries want wealthy nations to commit trillions of dollars to poorer ones bearing the brunt of extreme weather. Darren Taylor reports.
The United Nations COP29 climate summit takes place as 2024 develops into the hottest year ever recorded, with Africa suffering intense droughts and flooding. Scientists say burning fossil fuels produces layers of gas that envelop the earth, trapping heat. The increased temperatures, they say, cause weather events such as hurricanes and droughts to intensify. Dio Onyango is senior industry specialist at the International Finance Corporation, which helps clients invest in Africa. He says the continent needs trillions of dollars to mitigate climate change.
The Africa Development Bank has done a study and says that Africa loses between 5 to 15% of GDP per annum to climate change and requires well over 2.8 trillion over the 10 years 2020 to 2030. In order to implement all the national determined contributions that all the 54 countries in Africa have submitted under the Paris Agreement. However, to date, the continent's annual climate finance flows stand at only $30 billion. This leaves a staggering financing gap.
In 2009, wealthy countries committed to providing $100 billion a year in international climate finance by 2020. Research by the Center for Global Development and others shows they followed through on that pledge in 2022. But Africa and other developing regions say it's not enough. South Africa's Environment Minister, Dion George, tells VOA many developing countries report not receiving climate financing, resulting in a breakdown of trust between wealthy and poor regions.
We think that kind of debate isn't particularly healthy because if we're spending a lot of time on debating on whether the $100 billion was paid or not, the actual problem is that we need to respond.
George's and Africa's hope at COP29 is that the world agrees on a new funding goal.
Well, it's $1.3 trillion US we are putting onto the table. And where that comes from is that we do have an existential crisis in the world. And that number is looking at a global number that we believe the developed economy countries should be contributing to the developing economy countries.
George says much more investment is needed for African countries to cut emissions, adapt to rising temperatures, and prepare for and respond to climate disasters. But he thinks it's not likely richer countries will agree to vast tranches of funding at COP29.
It's more about having the conversation going in the right directions. There is an expectation that the developed economies would pay as they said they would pay. But we do know the reality of the situation, that many countries have taken a step to the right, so their electorates are less comfortable with contributing to other countries. And the other thing is we've got geopolitical tensions.
The UN says carbon emissions are not being cut fast enough. Its estimates show the planet heading for a temperature rise of between 2.5 and 3 degrees Celsius by 2100, an increase it says will be catastrophic. Without stronger financial commitments, says George, the world faces rising sea levels, devastating heat waves, and serious food insecurity. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
For Africa, the COP29 climate talks are expected to be a critical moment for the future of global climate action. The so-called Finance COP will see the establishment of the new Collective Quantified Goal, or NCQG, on climate finance. What does the NCQG do for Africa? VOA's Carol Van Dam put that question to David Abdoura, director of Corridio East Africa, a non-profit research organization focused on coral reefs in eastern Africa.
The new collective quantified goal is a new way to talk about the amount of money that is needed for climate finance, to try and get agreement amongst the countries of how much that should be. And of course, there's a lot of differences between different parties and sides on how much it should be and who it should come from.
This has been kind of an ongoing thing with every COP as it comes up. Do you have real hope this year that the COP summit will see some concrete commitments to African nations to deal with climate change effects? And by the way, of course, most African nations are not the big contributors to climate change.
No, Africa as a continent is one of the smallest contributors to climate change. So the history of these negotiations has been, of all COPs and these intergovernmental processes, is that sufficient money isn't put on the table to pay for all that is needed to be spent on. So I think, like all of them, this is an annual affair for climate. So the COPs are very important to have this space to come together. But no, I'm afraid we're not confident that enough will be put on the table this time or agreed. But it's an important step to go through.
What nations are, you know, most affected on the continent? And, you know, what kinds of, whether it's floods or other types of disasters, are they seeing as a result of climate change?
Oh, I think it's clear that all countries or all nations are profoundly affected by climate change now, no matter how poor or wealthy that they are, including to the West. But in Africa, it's all of that. It's floods at some times of the year. It's droughts in between. And there isn't sufficient funding or resources in the governments to cope with those crises and to build resilience before the next one comes in. So I couldn't pull out one in particular that has been most affected recently.
You know, historically, the climate finance pledges have always fallen short of what's needed for these countries to try to even meet the scale of the challenges that they're facing. And then even if they do have a little money that's set aside for this, they have all these other structural roadblocks. Mm-hmm. Describe what structural kind of barriers that these countries face, even if they do have a little bit of funding to fight climate change?
Well, the structural barriers the countries are facing now is that the natural capital or ecosystems or natural resources have been overexploited, mostly for export and foreign trade. And that has really undermined the natural capital within. And so there's very little left over to deal with internal needs and resilience. And then because of foreign debt, and I think it's well established now that the cost of raising capital or raising finance for aid in Africa is much higher than it should be, unfairly high compared to in the West, for example, in developed countries. So with high levels of debt, there's very little money left over within government coffers to pay for the infrastructure that's needed and the resilience that's needed to cope with climate change.
You know, I've seen some TV series and some movies where they depict COP in past summits, and very jaded view of what is going on there. Like, they show these financiers and these people, you know, on Wall Street coming to the COP, and they are making deals for coal and other energy producing things with these countries that are there supposedly to help countries in Africa and deal with climate change, but they're not doing that at all. Are those kinds of things really happening?
Well, I'm not on the inside of the climate negotiations now, but that's certainly been reported from a few days ago. And yes, there's a lot of private interests going into these COPs behind the scenes. I think climate change is all about fossil fuels, so there are a lot of deals being cut, I guess, behind closed doors at these COPs. The thing is, the COPs do serve an important purpose of bringing these issues to light on an annual basis and bringing a lot of people together who are fighting for the right things. But of course, we need to equal the playing field so that we get the right sorts of actions, I guess, being able to trump the wrong sorts of actions at these COPs, and we're not there yet.
That's David Abdoura, director of Cordio East Africa, a non-profit research organization focused on coral reefs in eastern Africa. He was speaking to VOA's Carol Van Dam from Lake Como, Italy. Mauritius' opposition coalition has won the country's election by a landslide. The Alliance for Change coalition took all parliamentary seats in a major rejection of the country's current government. Results were released at various constituencies across the country on Monday. The Associated Press reports the ruling coalition, led by Prime Minister Pravind Jugnauth, failed to win any of the available 62 seats. The opposition win will see the return of Navier Ramgoolam as Prime Minister, a position he held from 1995 to 2000 and again from 2005 to 2014. Official results are expected to be released Tuesday. The breakaway region of Somaliland in eastern Africa holds general elections tomorrow as the self-declared republic pushes for recognition from the international community and begins to play a larger role in the wider region. What could the outcome mean for Somalia, the Horn of Africa, and beyond? Henry Wilkins reports.
Somaliland, a breakaway region of Somalia, holds general elections on Wednesday. The incumbent president, Muse Bihi Abdi, of the Kulmiye or Unity Party, is hoping to secure a second term. Abdi Rahman Mohamed Abdullahi of the Wadani or National Party is the main opponent. But whoever wins, many voters say the most important issue for Somaliland, which declared independence from Somalia in 1991, is to finally get international recognition.
Yes, we are sending a message to the international community to give five recognition. Somaliland is a full functioning government. It has political parties, it has currencies, it's different from Somalia. It has stability. It's a democratic country.
Currently, no country or international body recognizes Somaliland as an independent nation. Mohamed Abdi Rahman, an analyst based in Somaliland's capital, Hargeisa, says the incumbent and opposition candidates have starkly different approaches.
On the issue, for example, on dialogue with Somalia, the current government rejects it. The opposition think it's important to engage a dialogue with Somalia. So one of them thinks it's more on confrontation policy. One of them thinks more is dialogue. That is one issue. The other issue is the MOU that Somalia signed with Ethiopia.
The MOU, or Memorandum of Understanding, signed in January 2024, gives landlocked Ethiopia access to Somaliland's coastline and a coastal military base. The move signals a shift by Somaliland to win recognition and play a larger regional role. Salem Tadesi Demisi is with the South African-based Institute for Security Studies.
It's a big deal, not just for Somaliland, but for the region as a whole. But now the agreement that is tabled with Somaliland also goes beyond the economic aspect of it and also includes some military kind of element as well. The Red Sea maritime space is a very critical water space, not just for this region, but globally, right?
Somalia is firmly against the MOU. China, which holds significant influence in the Horn of Africa and is dealing with its own perceived breakaway state in the shape of Taiwan, has also spoken out against the deal. But according to Abdi Rahman, the MOU and Somaliland's desire for self-determination are not going away, whoever wins.
There's no question about that. All those candidates vying for the top seat in Somaliland believe that Somaliland's right to independence.
Demissi says neighbouring governments are reluctant to recognise Somaliland's independence for fear of encouraging secessionist movements in their own countries. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. Senegalese Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko today called for vengeance following what he called opposition attacks on supporters of his PASTEF party during the campaign for Sunday's parliamentary elections. Sonko, who has been head of the government since he took office in April, spoke of clashes in the capital Dakar, the northern city of St. Louis, and the central town of Koungoul. The French news agency AFP reports that he blamed the attacks on supporters of Dakar mayor Bartholomew Diaz, who heads a rival coalition. Diaz's coalition, Sam Sa Kadu, denounced on social media a call to murder made by the current prime minister of Senegal. It said it had been targeted by multiple attacks during the campaign. The government of Chad today said that hundreds of Boko Haram fighters are fleeing the Central African state's territory and crossing over into Cameroon, Niger, and Nigeria. State TV reports the fighters fled after clashes with Chadian forces over the weekend that killed more than 100 Boko Haram fighters as well as close to 20 Chadian soldiers. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Les forces tchadiennes continuent de traquer les éléments résiduels de Boko Haram qui, selon le porte-parole de l'armée, le général...
Chad State TV reports that assaults have continued against Boko Haram's strongholds after the Central African State military saw almost 20 soldiers killed and 32 others injured in a Saturday battle with Boko Haram terrorists in the Lake Chad Basin. A government statement said about 100 Boko Haram fighters were killed and a dozen others injured during the clashes, and that Boko Haram fighters are now fleeing to Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger. Earlier this month, Chad's military launched an operation aimed at dislodging Boko Haram terrorists from areas around Lake Chad, according to the Central African State's President, General Mahamat Idriss Déby. Déby said the operation, named Haskanite, is to avenge the killing of 40 government troops in October and to improve security for civilians in the area. The offensive hit a complication last week when Déby said the fighting forces of Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger, who all contribute troops to the regional anti-terrorism joint task force, had decided to not collaborate with the Chadian offensive. Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger have made no public statements confirming or denying Déby's claim, and VOA could not independently verify if the three countries have chosen not to participate in the Chadian operation. Cameroon's military said it is improving security along the country's borders and protecting its civilians. Déby has said he planned to withdraw his troops from the multinational force, which has about 11,000 troops, because of the absence of what he calls coordinated efforts among member states to fight Boko Haram terrorism. Ramadi Hoinati is a lecturer at the University of N'Djamena in Chad and a researcher on strategic development in Central Africa and the Lake Chad Basin Commission.
Si les quatre pays du bassin du lac Tchad ne parvenaient pas à raviver leur coopération, chacun sur...
He says it is imperative for neighboring states to strategize and join Chad in fighting Boko Haram, because the terrorist group has a high capacity to infiltrate communities in Cameroon, Nigeria, and Niger, when attacked by forces from Chad. Remaji says fighters that survive onslaught from Chad government forces will escape to safety areas in Cameroon, Niger, and Nigeria, and return to Chad to commit more atrocities when Operation Huskanite ends. Chad has not said when it might withdraw its troops from the UN-assisted joint fighting force. Chad civil society groups and political parties say they are surprised that officials of the joint task force have neither reacted to Chad's threat to withdraw nor announced plans to cooperate with the offensive against Boko Haram. Hisseini Abdoulaye is a spokesperson of the Patriot, one of Chad's political parties. He spoke to VOA via a messaging app from Chad's capital, N'Djamena. Abdoulaye says although it is the right of any state or party to pull out of an organization if its interests are not protected and respected, he disagrees with Chad's announced plan to withdraw its troops from the multinational joint task force of the Lake Chad Basin Commission. He says Chad's military alone cannot stop militants from attacking government troops and communities. Boko Haram launched an armed rebellion against the Nigerian government in 2009 to establish an Islamic State. Fighting has since spread to neighboring countries and has killed more than 40,000 people, displacing over 3 million, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Beyond promising a return to his America First doctrine, President-elect Donald Trump has not provided details on what U.S. foreign policy will look like under his incoming administration. But his early conversations with leaders following his election victory indicate he aims to fulfill his promises to quickly end the conflicts in the Middle East and Ukraine. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara reports.
The war between Israel and Hamas in Gaza and Russia's invasion in Ukraine will be the global backdrop as Donald Trump and his America First foreign policy returns to the White House.
Nothing will stop me from keeping my word to you, the people. We will make America safe, strong, prosperous, powerful, and free again.
Trump's term starts January 20th, but he has already spoken with world leaders, including Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Moscow denies reports that Trump has also spoken to Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump campaigned on ending wars quickly. Analysts say he is eager to deliver.
When it comes to the Middle East, I think in some ways the message will be hurry up and finish this war. For Ukraine, it's going to be stop.
Trump has never explained how he will make war stop, but often criticizes the billions of dollars of U.S. aid going to Ukraine. A rapid end to the war could mean major concessions by Kyiv, something Zelensky says is not likely to happen.
We want a just end to this war. I am sure that a fast end of war means losses.
With North Korea sending soldiers to help Moscow, the war in Ukraine could have broader geopolitical implications at a time of escalating tensions on the Korean Peninsula.
That was White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wida-Kuswara reporting. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehias Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Regus, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.